Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of the Feuersteins Fire Soccer Podcast Show. I am your host once again, Daniel Feuerstein, and I will be discussing the game from an American perspective with our clubs, leagues, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me, writers, at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites. And don't forget, the EPL Talk and MLS Talk podcasts are hosted by Richard Farley. I would like to wish my fellow Jewish listeners a very happy Passover, and to my other friends for this coming Sunday, April 4th, a very happy Easter. Now, before I start the show, I just want to give a special thank you to my good friend Carter Krishnire. He took some time out of his busy schedule with the NASL. He came over to meet me while I was visiting my parents in South Florida during the first 2 days and nights of Passover. Without Mr. Krishnire, coaches, and front office people within all the clubs of the NASL. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that I've been relieved that the players' union came to that handshake on their collective bargaining agreement. The season has already started off with a bang as the Kansas City Wizards destroyed DC United with a 4-goal clean sheet thrashing. Defending Cup champions Real Salt Lake took out the San Jose Earthquakes with 3 goals, but on Thursday night lost by a goal on the road to the Houston Dynamo. And of course, the Texas Derby ended with a 1-1 stalemate. But when I was flying back from Fort Lauderdale on Thursday afternoon, I caught some news on my mobile phone through Twitter. MLS Talk's Randy Capps has reported that Major League Soccer announced, effective immediately, all are allowed 2 designated player spots, and if they wish to purchase a third, it would cost the individual club an additional $250,000. That if the Galaxy, Red Bulls, Sounders wish to add a third DP, that money would be shared as allocation among the clubs without 3 DPs. The release reads, each DP player signing will now count as $335,000 toward a team's budget and $167,500 if the DP is signed mid-season. According to the league, the $335,000 figure represents approximately 13% of a team's salary budget. Previously, teams were charged $415,000 per designated player. A team can also use its allocation money to bring that salary budget hit down to just $185,000. After all the worrying strike that never happened, from the league that is looking to make themselves stronger and better for the future. And as we all know, so many times the league, it gets criticized. And rightfully so, the quirky rules, the strange rules of this league to acquire players. You know, like I've said in the past, it has to be either scaled back or gone completely. But until that day happens, the annoyances, they do have to remain. But this shows that after this CBA negotiations, this union discussion with the league, it seems that the league and the players have finally come to a good understanding. Because we all know about the past. The past was that the players did not trust the owners, and probably the owners didn't trust the players. But now the breakthrough has happened, the CBA is signed once again, and this bit of news is fabulous news to hear. Positive for Major League Soccer, and you know what that means for talking about Red Bull, the rumors of Thierry Henry coming over? Now it's possible. There have been other rumors, maybe that Raul might be coming to the league. That could be good for Seattle to join with Freddie Ljungberg or with David Beckham, because Beckham will be hurt most of the time over in Los Angeles. In fact, maybe Chivas USA might bring one of their strikers down from Guadalajara and give him the DP money, a Mexican national team player. But for right now, until these teams start using the second DP and, of course, paying for their possible third, right now, it's a fabulous thing, and we don't have to worry about these so-called problems. And now, let's discuss the MLS Thursday night doubleheader that was on ESPN2. Of course, the first match at this yesterday, defending cup champions Real Salt Lake went down to Robertson Stadium to face the Houston Dynamo. And, you know, great match. No problems whatsoever, in my opinion. It's been a little chippy here and there, but you know what? Fabulous match from both sides. Javier Morales with the 18th-minute strike to make it 1-0 for Salt Lake. And, of course, that score would stand at the half. But then once the defense penalties in the area in the 52nd and the 55th, and who takes both penalties? Brad Davis. 2-1 Houston. The Dynamo win their first match. 4 points for the Dynamo, 3 points still for Salt Lake. And, of course, early on, the Superclásico between the Los Angeles Galaxy and Club Deportivo Chivas USA. And once again, it's Edson Buttle. 2 goals in the early on in the first half in the 7th. Great run. Buried it good. Chivas USA fighting and fighting and fighting, trying to get that equalizer to somehow pull even. And you never thought you'd see Chivas USA, they're onside second half, onsides in that one play, I believe it was in the 80th minute. They're attacking the Galaxy net, and then all of a sudden, there's this Donovan Ricketts is out, is way off his line. Completely way off his line. And he makes a couple of saves. There's a little bit of a blunder by the forward. And then afterwards, the other player from Chivas USA, sky high over the bar. Just completely sky high over the bar from point blank range. And how you miss a shot like that? It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable how you miss a shot like that. But once again, Landon Donovan, 87th minute, finds Edson Buttle. He danced around a defender, slots it home. 2-0 Los Angeles winning the first of two in the Superclásico between the Galaxy and Chivas USA. Now, if these two teams meet again in the U.S. Open Cup, we shall see what's going to happen. But for right now, one match is in the books on the West Coast. 2-0 Galaxy. And, of course, the earlier match, 2-1 Dynamo. And, of course, we have three matches coming up this Saturday, tomorrow afternoon and evening. I'm going to give you those matches right now. The Colorado Rapids will be hosting the Chicago Fire. That'll be a 4 p.m. Eastern Telefutura, of course, the Spanish language channel, which is, I'm a little amazed, I guess, the Sunday dates wasn't working for Telefutura. I'm assuming they probably lost a lot of viewership. Maybe the ratings weren't so good. So that's my assumption of why they're moving permanently now to Saturday afternoons. Sad to see, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do to make sure you promote the sport, not just to the American viewing audience, but to the Latin American communities as well, because you want to get them involved with MLS as much as possible. 7:30 p.m., and it's going to be on Direct Kick, obviously. If you're in the New England area, the D.C. United will be hosting the New England Revolution. D.C. plan against the Revolution, as they are definitely licking their wounds after getting blasted and allowing 4 goals past them. That will be in the New England area, Comcast Sportsnet New England. Not sure if it'll be on Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic over in the D.C., Southern Maryland, Northern Virginia area, but Right now, Comcast Sportsnet New England will be showing it live, and also you can catch on Direct Kick. And of course, Saturday night in Quest Field, the Northwest, the New York Red Bulls, fresh off their 1-0 victory against the Chicago Fire at Red Bull Arena, will have their first road match going to the Seattle Sounders, and you can see that live on Fox Soccer Channel. 10 o'clock starts the half-hour pregame show. 10:30 is for Red Bull and the Seattle Sounders. So that's your MLS schedule for this week end, this Saturday. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? It's going to be a fabulous weekend here. We all already know it's going to be a bunch of very good matches. To my guests, right quickly, right away, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Mr. Eddie Rock, soccer agent, with, I believe it's Corby Libero. I'm going to find out when he comes on at 2:15 this afternoon. Mr. David Falk, blogger for Goal Seattle, follows the Seattle Sounders in their old USL First Division days, A-League days, and now second year promoted in Major League Soccer. And that he'll be coming on around 2:30 this afternoon. And the NASL segment at 2:45, the new head coach of FC Tampa Bay, Mr. Paul Dalglish, he will be coming on discussing his time with the Houston Dynamo, what he expects from FC Tampa Bay this year. As you probably already know, the club will be in the USL Conference this year in the U.S. Soccer Division II League. Temporary, and then when 2011 comes, the FC Tampa Bay will move to the North American Soccer League. And, of course, the Red Bull Hour. I'll be discussing a quick match recap. I know it's been a couple of days since last Saturday, but once again, I was down in Florida. I was visiting my parents. They just recently retired a couple of months ago from the Northeast, and they're living down in South Florida now. And so it was Passover, and I went down for a couple of days just to visit them. And we've got audio, Hans Bach post-match press conference. Jeremy Hall, the goal scorer, Joel Linpear, Mike Petke, audio as well, and a small thing from Dane Richards. And, you know, we're going to talk more about Mr. Joel Linpear in the Red Bull Hour, you know, out of the blue, a terrific find for Red Bull, for Eric Soler, sporting director. He's worked well so far. You know, right now it's only been two matches. Of course, the friendly against Santos and the home match against the Fire. We'll see how he holds up through an entire season, and we'll wait and see what happens. But for right now, like I said before, we'll get to Joel Linpear down the road in the Red Bull Hour towards the end. And of course, this is going to be the opening weekend as well for the North American Soccer League and as well as the USL. Their Division II leagues. It should be very interesting to see what's going to happen. And, of course, as we all know, FC Tampa Bay will be playing their home matches at the spring training complex of the New York Yankees. George M. Steinbrenner Field, as his son Hank Steinbrenner, group that matches at George M. Steinbrenner Field. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, fabulous news coming from MLS about the designated player rule. And, you know, thank goodness we have some football to talk about. Very, very happy. And very soon, in about a minute or two, we're going to have on Mr. Eddie Rock coming on the show. Of course, he is a licensed players agent by the United States Soccer Federation, which means he can represent players who wish to ply their trade in either Major League Soccer, the new NASL, the USL leagues in the United States. And of course, you know, I've always wondered what makes a sports agent tick. we all know about the famous ones, Mr. Boris, who's a baseball player agent. And there's that other one, I keep forgetting his name, but he's in the NFL. I keep forgetting his name. But, you know, you always want to know what makes a sports agent tick. And especially dealing with a player who wants to be in Major League Soccer, I mean, you can make deal. You can talk to the players with the club. It's not a big deal. But, of course, the main okay is with Major League Soccer. And we're going to find out with Eddie what makes his job either simple or difficult an entire league who handles all the contracts in Major League Soccer. It's obviously, it's a lot different. So we're going to find that out from Mr. Eddie Rock, who will be on in about a couple of minutes with us. I might have to give him a call, but we'll see what's going to happen here. But other than that, you know, didn't really meet Mr. Eddie Rock, but what happened was is that when a couple of years ago when I was at CSRN, one of our producers is a friend of his, and he asked me if I can help him out to bring a player over from Red Bull, if it was possible, and I said, sure. You know, I'll be honest with everyone that I've never in my entire life. You know, that's completely out of my element, but you know what? I want to do something nice, and I did so. Unfortunately, did not get that player, as he apparently got a different agent. But you know what? We've kept in touch. I've kept in touch with Eddie. I have his business card, and I've kept in touch with him a little bit this past couple of weeks, months. Very nice gentleman to talk to. And, you know, we, very nice guy to talk to, and hopefully we'll have him on the show and give him a call right now to see what's going on, and hopefully he'll give us some inside information.
Eddie,
you're on the Four Seasons Fire show. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you, Daniel?
I'm doing very good. So how is it over in Chicago?
It's summer is here. It's beautiful weather. And,
yeah.
We're about a week away from the Fire's home opener against San Jose on the 10th.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, you brought the cold with you last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Eddie, just for the listeners out there, really quick, what made you get into the sports agent business?
Well, I was actually a college coach after finishing undergrad. I was an assistant at the University of Chicago for the men's program. Liked coaching, but at least in the college environment, it wasn't, I think, a passion for me. One of the issues was you spend, you know, 7 to 9 months of the year recruiting and for a shortened season of, you know, 2.5 to 3.5 months, depending on what type of program you're with. So I felt like if I wanted to go the coaching route, I wanted to do more on the field. And then ultimately I got went to law school. And when I was in law school, I had an opportunity to do a legal internship with Major League Soccer and worked in the player personnel department. And in that way, I think that really got me on my start. So I worked with people like Todd Durbin, Nelson Rodriguez in the league office, and I was able to see how, at least here in the U.S., how everything worked from the inside, and started to get some consulting projects on the side when I was still in law school. I brought in two friends from coaching, Christian Labors and Ben Dickey, into the fold, and we formed Libero Sports, which essentially was just did consulting for the league. And then once I finished law school, that is, sat for the FIFA exam and obtained my player license. So we're now in our third year of representing players domestically, and we've been a company for approximately about 4 years.
Congratulations, and I remember you telling me when I was over at Red Bull Media Day, you just opened an office on the other side of the world, I believe in India or Indonesia?
India and Singapore, and in the process of opening one in Vietnam as well.
Oh, wonderful. Congratulations on the success.
Thank you.
No problem. Now, obviously, when you see a sports agent, and I guess it doesn't matter in which sport or league in the United States it is, NBA or Major League Baseball, but as you all know, Major League Soccer, you have to negotiate with a league, not just the individual club. Can you tell us the difference of that? I mean, how is that possible for a sports agent like yourself to handle an entire league and not an individual professional sports club?
Well, I think sometimes I think there's probably a myth out there that the league is actually the ones who are you know, telling teams what happens. You know, I think almost every team now has a role as a technical director, and that person is responsible for who's there going to be there long term. You know, coaches come and go, and it seems like right now we're at a 3-year window if a coach doesn't win a championship in the league. But the technical director is supposed to be there long term. That person is dealing with everything from, you know, identifying foreign players, up-and-coming college players, trades with other teams, and also the salary cap. So in a lot of ways, you know, teams, I feel like, have the autonomy to say, you know, we can, you know, this is a price that works. At the end, you know, the league always is the one that steps in and signs the player directly. And they're you know, it's probably fair to say there's some veto power the league has if they think one of their teams is making a mistake or that there's economic reasons with the salary cap that the team has not considered. But in most cases, it starts with the technical director, and then the league comes in at the end when the paperwork needs to be done and, you know, the finances need to be finalized. So in a lot of ways, you know, if I deal with a club in Sweden or a club in the U.S., there's not much difference. And I think it was, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, it was definitely a different scenario. But I do feel like a lot of the clubs now have the autonomy that you would see with any other football club in the world.
Well, that's very good information right there, Eddie. Really, inform us, you know, obviously the whole labor negotiations between the league and the players' union, obviously from the outside, were you able to give advice or instruct some of these players who might be or might not be using you as their agent to help out, or has the league come to you to ask for your advice as well, as since you were a former employee of them?
Well, no, the short answer is no. You know, I think the league, the players' union, you know, they, you know, I think had everything straightened out. What we did with some of our players, especially the ones that were coming out, leaving college and entering MLS, you know, part of it was just, you know, making sure that they understood how the CBA process worked. That was kind of the most important thing for us dealing directly with our players. You know, I think the second was, you know, identifying potential overseas opportunities for our players. And you have a case of Michael Thomas, who was drafted number 19 overall by San Jose. He was, I think, probably, you know, it would be fair to say he was lined up as a developmental player for San Jose, even though he had been drafted 19 overall in the second round. And because, you know, we didn't know where things were going to be with the labor issues, we were able to identify an opportunity for him to go to the Allsvenskan in Sweden's top division, where he was able to get a contract, which is, you know, is better than you would have seen even with the new collective bargaining agreement. So we were able to use, in some ways, the uncertainty around, you know, the labor issue to benefit one of our players.
That's pretty interesting. So how many players are under contract with, how do you pronounce it again, Libero?
Libero Sports or
Libero
Sports. Yeah.
How many players do you have under contract both within the U.S. and abroad?
In the U.S., it's on the men's side, it's 20. We also have 4 women who are on the national team pool. And then overseas, it's right now roughly, you know, guys that we've signed or that, you know, we're definitely exclusively helping or identifying opportunities for is another 20, 25. So roughly about 50 players worldwide.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty good. I'm very happy for you. Your name's been out there, so I guess partially me advertising your name. No.
I
was telling the viewers, you actually asked with a Red Bull player. Unfortunately, it didn't work. But, you know, that was like, to be honest with you, that was the first, you know, that sort of thing to bring a player over to someone who was in this business to be, you know, become a client for you. What advice can you give, like, you know, for someone who wants to be in this business, that wants to sign professional soccer players or even professional athletes?
There's a couple of things. One, now in our third year, if I probably knew everything we had to do to get to this point, I don't think it's a conscious decision that you make, more what I could consider a hobby and doing it part-time, where you're trying to manage maybe three or four players and, you know, and just focusing on that. Or do you want to set up a firm or an agency where you do, you know, 20, 30, 40, and then maybe in your third year where we're at 50 players, where we finally have the depth and the scope, you know, really to make this a viable and being a viable business.
Wow, that's really great. I hate to tell you this, but unfortunately with Skype, it kicked me off.
Did it really?
Yeah, it did, but you know what? It's ongoing. It's on the show, so, you know, unfortunately this is what happens with a live show, and this is the problem with Skype, I understand, so this is the first time it's happened to me. But listen,
right,
you don't have to repeat it. It's already being it's probably already recorded, so
okay.
I just got kicked off. But anyway, I was going to say real quick, if you were – now, obviously, I'm not saying you know, you're going to be the next commissioner of Major League Soccer, but since you've been aware of what goes on in Major League Soccer, if you don't mind me picking your brain, if there were any changes that you would like to see within Major League Soccer, either with the rules – or maybe a roster spot additions, what would it be in your opinion?
There's a couple of things. I think first is, you know, it would probably be fair to say that the league is really focused on the infrastructure for the first 15, you know, years. Now I think there's definitely going to be a focus towards the players and what's on the field to bring in more fans and bring in more viewers. You know, I think I like the second and the, possibly the third DP spot for teams. I mean, that means, you know, teams like New York, Chicago, LA are really going to be able to, if they have the money internally, go out there and bring in, you know, what would be world-class iconic players. I think that's going to be good for the league. I would actually think it would be good to eliminate one of the foreign spots. I think when a team can have, you know, eight foreigners on the field, I don't think that's good for soccer in this country long term. You know, if a player does have a green card, they're seen as a domestic player. So in some ways, you could have theoretically a team that has no U.S. players on there. So within MLS, I would reduce one of the foreign spots, which would also create more of a it would decrease the supply of foreign players, but I also think increase demand for better ones. So that, I think you're going to have better foreigners rather than foreigners who fit under the salary cap. You know, the second thing they need to do is encourage clubs to bring players up through their youth development system. And you've already seen that with DC United taking an advantage of that with two players that are now on their MLS roster. So what more they can do to promote that, I think, would be maybe even allowing one player every 3 years an exemption on the roster, which, you know, I think they now have two homegrown spots per team. More rules like that are definitely going to help. The more if there's a direct path from under 16 to the top team, I think the better players you're going to attract into the sport.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think that's a good idea. You know, obviously, you're trying to concentrate more on the American player than you are bringing many foreigners, but unfortunately, I think you've seen it yourself. A lot of people would love to see players like Thierry Henry come over, you know, like David Beckham has come over, maybe Mr. Bastian Schweinsteiger, from Bayern Munich to come over, or Franck Ribéry, of course, you have to limit that because, you know, when you see Jens Lehmann attempting a rumor to come to MLS, you're like, look, you know, you got to draw the line somewhere, especially if you're over 42 years old.
Yeah. Well, again, I want top players to come over here. But I think if you could look at the seventh foreigner on any MLS club, and there's no one goes to the gate to see that person. So what I'm saying is, let's maybe cut back on the number of foreigners that are on the team. But I'm just saying, my proposal would be by one. But let's go after better, you know, foreign or international players. Let's bring in guys that are really at the top of their domestic game or top of their country.
Fabulous, Eddie. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. I really do appreciate this. I know we weren't able to meet each other at Red Bull Arena because it was so hectic, just like the last match was against Santos.
Yeah.
If you're ever, you know, let me know. We'll go meet up, and I'll take you to this fabulous Belgian place in the city.
Sounds good. Fantastic.
All right. Thanks again, Eddie. And once again, the new offices.
All right. Thank you.
No problem at all. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Eddie Rock, head of the Libero Sports Agency company. Very interesting insights you had, and I apologize for what happened. I got kicked off by Skype. First time that's happened to me, and hopefully it will never happen again. Coming up next, as I call him up, Mr. David Falk of Goal Seattle. As we are ready to talk to him, as we all know, the fabulous year that the Sounders had last year, winning the U.S. Open Cup as the first-time MLS expansion club, technically, but they were promoted. So we're going to give Mr. Falk a call right now.
Hello?
David Falk, it's Daniel Feuerstein, sir. How are you?
Good.
Good. Welcome to the show very much. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. David Falk, the head writer of Goal Seattle, a fabulous site I checked up on a couple of years ago. Actually, I think it was 2 years ago as I was trying to expand being on Around the League in 90 Minutes on CSRN. We wanted to bring you in as the next Seattle correspondent for the show. Unfortunately, certain things happen. We're not going to go into that. But Mr. Falk, I have to say, it looks like the Sounders are back on the right track after the opening week match.
Yeah, we were pleasantly surprised with a few parts of the game. The club has had a terrible time scoring goals at home over the end of last year and then during preseason this year. So for us, two goals seemed like a lot more. But as they can get that solved, they're pretty strong in the back. So they were good signs to pick, to pick out from the game, even though, you know, we probably should have beat Philly by 4 or 5 based on overall play. But we'll take what we can get and move on from there.
That's okay. The Red Bulls should have destroyed Chicago 3-0. Unfortunately, they only got one goal, you know.
Yeah, we just U.S. Soccer, the Referees Officials Association, you know, every week they pick out a few plays in MLS to discuss where refs got things right or got things wrong. And kind of surprisingly, because this slipped under our radar, one of the highlights that they showed was a goal that was called back for the Sounders in the 81st minute against Philadelphia. Sana Nyasi had scored, and they called it offside, and the crowd, we didn't think anything of it. It turns out that the officials were wrong, and it should have been 3-0, and that should have been Nyasi's first goal in MLS. But
really? Wow.
Yeah, since it didn't cost us the game.
It's always the on-field officials, isn't it?
Well, there's a theory that the officials never would have even called themselves out if that had been a 0-0 draw, and that would have been the winner.
Oh,
so
really?
So maybe they just decided, yeah, here's where we screwed up, and here's why, because it was already 2-0, but in any case, the kid will get one eventually, one of these days.
Yes, he will. I guess my theory is correct. U.S. On-field officials are like hockey officials, the makeup call.
Yeah. You know, offsides is such a tough thing, and I know when I watch A-League in Australia, their linesmen tend to err on the side of the offense. So if they're not sure, they let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Our linesmen seem to me to err on the side of the defense, and if they aren't sure if it's an offside, they go ahead and call it. And I wish we could get over that. And you know, I'd rather see a goal count that was marginal than have goals always brought back that could be good or that were marginal.
That's very true. Yeah, that's very true, you know. David, obviously last year was a surprise to most of us here in Major League Soccer, but definitely was not a surprise to you as you've seen these Sounders before they came to Major League Soccer. Please talk about last year and that fabulous U.S. victory on the road at RFK against D.C. United.
The year was a great year. And, you know, it ended – the image that's still in my mind is not scoring in the playoffs against Houston and losing in overtime. And that was a disappointment. But I know so many people around the country have said, well, what are you crazy? You made the playoffs and you won the Open Cup in your first year. And while that was an awesome first year, definitely we have high expectations. And I think we do because for some of us do, because we followed the club when it was in the USL and – the same people that were making the soccer decisions then came with us, and we added even more, intelligence with Ziggy Schmidt and Chris Henderson. So we felt like the soccer side of what's going on here, we shouldn't really miss a beat, and that's exactly what happened. The guy I'm talking about is Adrian Hanauer, who was the GM when the Sounders won the USL title, USL First Division titles in 2000. They went in 2004, lost to Montreal. Won in 2005, and then won again in 2007. So we're used to trophies in the second division, and we're also out here used to arguing that there's not as huge of a gap as you might think between the USL and the MLS. But probably what we have learned is that there's not that big of a gap between the really elite teams in USL and the okay teams in MLS. So there was no reason for us to think that when coming in, if we believe that we couldn't at least hang around and compete for a playoff spot, which eventually happened. But as far as the U.S. Open Cup went, the Sounders, as an organization, had been knocking on the door for quite a few years.
Yes, they have.
We were in the semifinals both in 2007 and in 2008.
I remember. I was watching you guys through the USL Live, and I was like sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this would be fabulous if the Sounders – you know, not since Rochester back in 1999 actually would go to the final.
Yeah, we were pushing, and Charleston knocked us out in 2008, and then they had to, and that was in penalty kicks, and the Charleston Battery did, and then they went to D.C. in 2008 and lost their match to
D.C., yep.
Yeah, and on that Charleston club was a guy named Oswaldo Alonso. And so when the Sounders came into being, one of the smart things that Hanauer did was he said, well, we are a USL club coming up. He worked a deal with MLS to have the first rights to claim any USL player that he wanted before any other MLS club could over a certain period of time. And it was pretty clear that he did that to target the Sounders he already had under contract, but also to get Oswaldo Alonso. So it was quite a story then that there, you know, 365-ish days later, who's at D.C. United but Seattle Sounders FC, and right in the middle of the pack leading the way is Oswaldo Alonso. And this time, you know, he came out 2-1 winners with the Sounders the very next year. So, and, of course, he's a good story in his own right because he's a Cuban defector. But
very true.
Yeah, the Open Cup run was dramatic. It was awesome. They had a lot of great games. There was controversy against Kansas City. There was a do-or-die last-minute goal to tie Houston. There were all sorts of things that went on before the big game with D.C. United and with, of course, all the pregame banter between their president and our GM. So.
Mm-hmm. Not to get off track here, away from Seattle, David, but let me pick your brain quickly on U.S. national team. Before the USA qualified, or at least qualified for the final round of qualifying, many people were watching the match on ESPN when the USA went to play Cuba in a World Cup qualifier in the semifinal round. And, of course, Clint Dempsey was the only goal scorer of the match. Now, obviously, Cuba is not a strong side. You know, when they come over here, 10 goals past them and, you know, still look strong. But, you know, my feeling was this, and I don't know if you share this or not. I'd like to get your quick opinion on this. That field is not manicured well. The lights were poor. And Bob Bradley couldn't even get a scouting report on any of the players. You know, I mean, this is not like, you know, okay, you go to Jamaica, here's a video or here's a DVR of what, you know, players like Dane Richards can do for Jamaica or Ricardo Fuller can do for Jamaica. You know, this is something different. This is a communist country. This isn't like, you know, China. I mean, what's your opinion of this?
As to whether or not Cuba should be more forthcoming with information about the club, or
more about we should have put 7 past them on their own soil.
Oh, well, probably. I mean, I go back and forth. One minute I think the U.S. is underachieving, and then the next minute I think I have a reality check and realize we're probably just about where we should be based on the talent we have. You know, I mean, this is a club that went in and took Brazil to 3-2 in the Confederations Cup. I think when you're playing away in CONCACAF, that a win is a win. I wasn't too concerned about it, and you had to believe that Cuba would fight for their lives, and you'd have to believe that the USA is thin at forward. So, you know, or at least we are now. If we weren't, with Dempsey now being hurt, and with Charlie Davies hopefully coming back. I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember whether those guys featured in that match. But, you know, when you escape anywhere on the road that's south of our borders with a win, you just say, okay, that's it, and we move on. So, you know, the least of my concerns is that they only beat Cuba 1-0. You know, we shouldn't forget, if we're talking Cuba, that Mikhail Galindo is another former Seattle Sounder who...
Yes, he is.
...has most recently been with Chivas USA. I don't know that I don't remember if he's still there, but... So he's another Cuban guy, and if you think of those... If you think of Alonso and Galindo still being with Cuba, that's pretty strong right up the middle there. And Cuba loses a lot of people.
Yeah, I know.
If anything, I would have wanted to watch that game, and I didn't see it live. I would have wanted to watch it just to see who we might get from a defection next. You know?
It's a scouting trip. You know, bring the contact the Navy, send the submarine just off their shores, and just, you know, send the message in the bottle.
It's sad. We could book a plane with maybe 4 or 5 extra seats. But it's terrible. We couldn't, you know.
I know. But hopefully one day, you know, good fortunes will come to that country, and hopefully the communism will end.
There's a talent drain for everything, unfortunately, out of Cuba.
Yeah, exactly.
Doctors, baseball players, whatever it is.
We'll take it. I have to ask you this question. It probably was strange seeing a in Sebastian Letoux wearing the gold and dark blue of Philadelphia Union. And I remember him being on your USL club and last year for the MLS club. You know, please talk about him. And I bet you're missing him pretty much.
It's a double-edged sword because this will be just me, although I can reflect on what the fans think too. But for just me, I miss him as a person. I don't necessarily miss him as an MLS striker. As a person, you couldn't have asked for a better guy to be the first player that we ever signed. And his work rate is incredible. The man, you know, has not a single ounce of fat on his body. He's very fit, and he always gave his best for the Sounders. And, yeah, he scored some very important goals for us in that great 2007 year when we won the second division. But I never believed at the MLS level that he was a pure forward that should be, you know, that's where he should play. And I still don't. I think he's going to struggle with Philly. I think he's mismatched with that club. I don't think the coach is a good match for him. They play a style of soccer that's completely the opposite of what he likes to do. He's all finesse and flair and speed, and they've got a bunch of roughhousers. So until unless Moreno can link with him, I don't see good things for Sebastian Afili at all.
Right.
Having said that, he was given a huge send-off here. The supporters, rented a banquet hall. There were tears. There were pictures. There are people who, badmouth the Sounders and who are still not over it. So definitely he was loved here as a person and for some as a player. But, you know, we didn't lose much when we lost him. And his salary was, I think, $100,000. So Philly took a little bit of a chance taking a guy like that in the expansion draft. And based on what I saw in our home opener, Sebastian had a goal called back offside, and he was their most lively player up front. But I don't see that team doing anything this year, and I think Sebastian's going to be just a part of that failure. So.
Yeah. Well, David, listen, I thank you very much for joining me this afternoon here. I know it's probably time in Seattle, and we'll definitely give you a call back when it's CONCACAF Champions League time, my friend.
Okay.
Thank you very much for joining me, David, and have a
good day. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. David Falk, ladies and gentlemen of the Goal Seattle blog. And right now it's time for the NASL segment. Of course, that is the North American Soccer League, and I am very happy and pleased to be calling up on the line a Mr. Paul Dalglish, who is the former player of the Houston Dynamo. He is now the head coach of FC Tampa Bay. And we're going to give him a call right about now, and we'll discuss, and we'll have a quick discussion.
Hello?
Mr. Dalglish, Daniel Feuerstein, thank you very much for coming on the NASL segment with us.
No problem. Pleasure to be there.
Thank you. So, Mr. Dalglish, tell us, what can you tell us about this brand new season of FC Tampa Bay?
It's going to be a very exciting season. Obviously, it's an exciting for any city, a franchise coming back, and not only a new franchise coming back, but a franchise that meant so much to people in the past. You know, a lot of people have missed the Rowdies ever since they've left the Tampa area, but now we're back. We really have put together a team to be proud of, and everyone should be excited about the future of the organization.
Now, I understand that the temporary home will be the spring training complex of the New York Yankees, the American Baseball Club. What does it feel to actually work with a member of the Steinbrenner family that is known very well all over this country? Donors of the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible that they've let us use their home. It really is incredible that nobody else has been allowed to use the venue before. There's only us. So it's a privilege, really, to be in partnership, I guess, with an organization as successful as the Yankees. And hopefully we can bring a little bit of success that the stadium's used to. And our results as well.
Now, I understand it's a temporary home, as I understand the ownership group is trying to get the city to help construct brand new grounds for the club. Are you familiar with what's going on or the plans of how this will happen?
Yeah, I mean, but it's the ownership group are adamant that they want to build a new stadium and a soccer-specific stadium, and I think that there's a few options at the moment that they're deciding between, and there's a few things to sort out, but it's definitely in our long-term future too, and not just our long-term, but I think it'll be something that'll be confirmed in the not-too-distant future of a stadium we can call our own home. I mean, well, I don't know a timeline on it, but it's definitely something that we're working on.
Fabulous news to hear, and I'm very glad that I have said many, many times, for the game to grow in the United States, There has to be stadiums. There has to be stadiums for all the professional clubs. Doesn't matter if it's in Major League Soccer, the new North American Soccer League, or the United Soccer Leagues. There must be stadiums that these clubs can call their home and not pay any form of rent to a landlord. Silly question. Have you worked on your Florida tan?
I think I've got the forearm and the neck and the head. We've been that busy being an expansion team, and with it being pre-season, the guys aren't really getting home, and I'm not really getting home till 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. So, not much chance to sunbathe there. I've got a red face, a red head, and red arms. And the backs of my knees are red as well. So it's more like a British tan than a Florida tan.
Oh, that's quite all right. You could always try at the end of the season. You'll probably get 2 weeks of holiday. Can you talk about some of the players that you'll be having for FC Tampa Bay this year? Anyone that we're familiar with?
We've taken Josh Lambeau, who was a U20 national team player, goalkeeper from FC Dallas on loan. Julian Valentin, who was a U20 captain for the national team, we signed him on a permanent basis from LA Galaxy. Jeremy Christie, 26 caps for the New Zealand national team, played in the Confederation Cup against the USA in the summer, and hopefully he can be called up to the New Zealand squad for the World Cup. Then we've got the likes of Gordon Clifton, who's Sasha Clifton's brother. We've got Pascal Millien, who was a standout performer at UT, nice to get the local talent in that's done well in the college area as well. And then we've got like a Long Tan, who's a Chinese international, Takuya Yamada, who was a full Japanese international. We've got Aaron King. Aaron Wheeler was the MVP of PDL last year and top goal scorer. So we've got Adam Nolan, played at West Ham in England. We've got the basis of a really good team. I mean, the other one that pretty interesting to people is Yendry Diaz, who defected from Cuba when the Cuban national team played the U23 US national team in the United States. So he's stayed in Tampa, and he's another one that's got an interesting story. So we've got some real interesting stories and some really good players for our level for the upcoming season.
Mr. Dalglish, obviously when a player is done and he's put his time into the game, running up and down the pitch, scoring as many goals as possible, crossing the ball to the striker, you know, some will probably just go on commentating the game. Some will move on to coaching. Why after your playing career was over?
Sorry, the line went a bit funny there. Did you?
Oh, I apologize. Yeah, no. Why did you move on to coaching after your playing career?
I can't see myself doing anything else other than being involved in the game. I mean, coaching was something that always interested me, even at a young age. I've always seen me going into coaching management at the end of my career. Something that I'm very passionate about, and something that I always wanted to challenge the ideas that I had, put them into practice. And I didn't want to be one of those players that sits on the TV and criticizes everybody without actually having had the goal themselves. You know, if you know that much about the game, go and produce a team that can entertain people, you know, and can teach young players the game. You know, I'm a real lover of the game, and it's coaching is my love, and I actually prefer coaching to playing. I've got much more confidence in myself as a coach, and it was something that I kind of finished my career early to start my coaching education and to start my coaching career.
You spent two seasons with the Houston Dynamo in Major League Soccer, and you won the MLS Cup back in 2006. Just talk about that season. Talk about winning the championship of the league. What was going through your emotions that day?
Oh, it was. I mean, we I signed. I came over in August, and it was I came from Scotland, and it was, I mean, it was a culture shock to me going into the middle of the summer in Houston, coming from the climate in the UK. I stepped off the plane. I didn't know what hit me. I thought the whole place was like a sauna. It was the hottest conditions I've ever played in, and it was tough, you know, to get used to. But once I got used to the heat, after a couple of days settled down, and Brian Ching and myself struck up a bit of a partnership up front, and luckily enough, we had a great coaching staff in Dominic Kinnear and John Spencer, and we had a great team, and we were lucky enough to bring the championship back to Houston in inaugural season. But it was the highlight of my career that day in Dallas, especially with it being in Dallas. The whole all the Texian Army got in the cars and went in a big convoy up to Dallas, and when we walked out for the kickoff and the place was jumping, you just saw a sea of orange everywhere, and it felt like we had to win it for them, you know. And even when Wellman scored very late in the game, and then straight from the kickoff we went up, Brian Ching scored, and it was like, well, it's meant to be. And then when Pat Onsad stayed the penalty, it was just all your emotions kind of, and all the hard work that you put in to win the championship kind of came out, and it was a big party that evening, I can tell you.
How did it feel to meet the New England manager, Steve Nichol, obviously a Liverpool legend, a legend for Scotland as well? Just please, you know, just to tell us from your own words, what it means to probably meet him, to face him against New England?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was kind of weird for me because I've known Steve Nichol since I've been in nappies and diapers. You know, he played for my dad. My dad was his coach when he played for Liverpool. My dad was his teammate at Liverpool. So then for me to have known him since I was, you know, a little rug rat running around the players' lounge in at Anfield, and then all of a sudden I'm playing against his side with my dad in attendance, it was kind of weird. But and it must have been kind of weird for Steve Nichol as well. But thankfully it didn't feel too weird when we won. And although I did feel sorry for Steve Nichol because he's a very good friend of my father's, it was... I think the joy of us winning kind of took over that the feeling of sorriness for Steve.
You've been here for a while. You're now coaching. You were a player in the Division I League of the United States. In your opinion, U.S. soccer as a whole, where do you see it from here on out?
I think the best thing that ever happened was David Beckham coming over. Just for worldwide profile of American soccer. That kind of brought attention to the game. Now, once we have the attention, now it's up to us to make sure the product is the very best it can be. And the people, we've got, David Beckham got people interested. You know, he sold out stadiums himself. I think in his first season ever he went, every team that LA Galaxy played, the stadiums were nearly all sold out. So he got people there. Now it's up to us to keep people interested. And I think the likes of Landon Donovan going over to Everton, doing so well, gives credibility to the American players worldwide. Seeing that someone from this league can go and play in the greatest league in the world with ease and then come back and step into MLS. You know, it was a massive step for all MLS players. His credibility was Landon Donovan doing as well as he did when he went to Everton. Because, I mean, I was very surprised when I first came over from Houston at the stand. It's much better than anyone gives it credit for. And I think just knowing the mentality of people or a lot of the people in Europe, what they don't they take into consideration about MLS is the extreme heat that the games are played in. A lot of like Salt Lake and Colorado are played at altitude. So people watch it and the game may be a little bit slower. But there's reasons for the game being slower. The conditions are much tougher to play in. And I don't think that the players in this country get enough credit for how physically fit they are. You know, the players are elite athletes, and you have to be an elite athlete to play and the conditions that they have to play.
Exactly. And finally, Mr. Dalgleish, would you like to send a message to your friends in Miami against Miami FC?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. We've got an instant rivalry, in-state rivalry. And to be fair, the guys at Miami have been really, really helpful to us in our first year. The guys down there, the organization as a whole, have been really, really helpful, you know. And there's a real bond between all the newly formed NASL clubs, and everyone's trying to help each other. So we have a brilliant relationship with Miami off the field. But on the field, I think the in-state rivalry is going to kick in, and it's going to be a game that all Ralph's mob and all the Tampa Bay Rowdy supporters are going to really look forward to, and one that will be, it'll add that little bit of spice to win it, so we can have bragging rights in the state.
Paul Dalgleish, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Dalgleish, thank you for being on the show, and I hope I wish you plenty of success this season for FC Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Sir. Paul Dalgleish, head coach of the FC Tampa Bay Rowdies in the North American Soccer League. It's going to get very interesting, ladies and gentlemen. As we all know, the North American Soccer League, they want to dominate second division, and hopefully that will happen. And now, this is the Red Bull New York Hour. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it was another fun-filled night at Red Bull Arena as the club officially opened the new stadium against their first opponents on their MLS schedule, the Chicago Fire. Yes, it was a very cold night in Harrison as the lovely warm weather about 2 weeks ago for Santos disappeared when Chicago brought the cold temperatures in the high 30s to low 40s and a bitterly cold wind. I knew I should have worn my soccer socks that night. Oh, boy. Sure, there were over 400 people short of a sellout, but the atmosphere never disappeared from the players walking on to the field all the way to the final whistle. And you know what? I also have to give credit to the visiting Chicago Fire supporters that filled their away section. They never quit at all. They danced, jumped, sung, and yeah, they broke out a flare or two. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, security actually left them alone, as they left alone the ESC and Garden State supporters in their sections. Well, you know, play was choppy in the first 20 minutes, but it did settle down afterwards. But when the 40th minute struck on the match clock, that's when Estonian midfielder dropped the ball from midfield line and laid it off to Danle Borman, who crossed it in towards Juan Pablo Angel. Unfortunately, it was cleared away by the defender. But once again, Lindpair pounces on the rebound, and instead of the left foot, he used his right. And the laser shot struck the upper 90. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Lindpair is quickly becoming a new fan favorite for the club. And I have to say that if he keeps up this production, he might get a call back to Europe and play for one of the top clubs in England, Germany, Spain, or Italy. But right now, he's ours. Second half starts, and the club is starting to attack the Fire's end of the field. The best chance of the night for Juan Pablo Angel was in the 57th minute when Danle Borman had the ball on the left side and crossed a good one that Fire player Mike Banner misjudged. Angel settles and rips a hard shot. Unfortunately, that was blocked by a rushing Wilman Conde. Great chance, but a better bit of defending by Conde, honestly. All second half, the Fire couldn't break through BNY's 18-yard box. But they did have several dangerous free kicks that did trouble Buna Kondul. Yet he was able to make the diving saves to keep the clean sheet. After 3 minutes of second-half stop, referee Baldomero Toledo blows his whistle to end the match, and RB At the same time, for a head coach, Hans Bacca, he did earn his first victory in Major League Soccer. Honestly, you can say that Andrew Dykstra was never seriously tested by RBNY. The Red Bulls had many chances to make this a three-goal victory, but either the defenders helped Dykstra or the shots didn't have enough mustard on them, with the exception of Lin Pair in the 40th minute. But still, a win is a win. As I have said, it was historic. I also have to give credit to new Chicago Fire head coach Carlos de los Cabos. He had a great game plan to road and nearly stole free if Brian McBride's bad shank on the bicycle didn't go off the far post in the 23rd minute. That ball had eyes, and it blinked when it plinked the post. It looks like the foreign coaches that are coming to MLS is finally giving the league the respect it deserves. But still, this was the first week of the new season. And what a week it was for Red Bull New York. ESPN, of course, was producing the match. Rob Stone, obviously displaying the good things you can do when you walk out of a famous pub like Nevada Smith's and you head over to the PATH train, probably about, I think, 5 or 6 blocks away, because you have to go towards the west side of the city, as Nevada Smith's is on the east. Corey Jameson, my friend, you're a star. Yes, Giant Stadium was an own goal, but I will. Red Bull Arena is a combination of a Jozy Altidore screamer, a Yuri Zhurkov rainbow shot, gently kissing the near post and into the net, a Juan Pablo Angel free kick, the Giovanni Savarese bicycle kick goal, all rolled into one. That is Red Bull Arena. Yeah, a little over 400 people short of another consecutive sellout. But you know what? People are walking around. People are, you know, they're amazed at this new stadium. They've never been there before, you know. They're still trying to get used to what to do, where to go, and what to see. Obviously, the terrible weather 2 weeks before the before the MLS opener, supposed to be the Red Bull under-18s facing the U.S. under-17 national team. Unfortunately, that got scratched because of the bad weather, the bad hurricane weather. And I think you remember 2 weeks ago I told you here in my apartment, it was the roofers, just the carpenters fixing everything to make sure that we don't get these leaks again. But forget my problems with my apartment. Don't even worry about that. Red Bulls looked fantastic. The back line once again. Jeremy Hall on the right, Roy Miller on the left, and again the central backs, Mike Petke, the veteran, Tim Ream, the rookie, never ever looked out of place. Sure, Tim probably allowed a couple of chances to go by, but it wasn't that they were so much they were dangerous. It was more like it wasn't the calmness, the professionalism. Very, very surprised that Tim Ream has looked this good so fast. It's just absolutely fabulous to see a rookie center back not nervous at all throughout the preseason and his first two matches at home to actually be this good this quick. And you know what I have to say, honestly? It's been going around the room a little bit. Well, Nathaniel E. Baker of the American Soccer News site has said, now, you know, I'm hoping Tim Ream doesn't hear this, but he has already said, and I kind of agree with him, future center back for the U.S. national team. It could happen. Now, we're not saying now. He needs a couple, at least a year or two under his belt to be comfortable. hopefully the qualifiers for the 2014 World Cup, that is where he could become the next U.S. national team superstar. And let's hope it does happen. And speaking about Mr. Nathaniel E. Baker, he writes for American Soccer News. It is AmericanSoccerNews.com. You just click on the Red Bull New York section. He got this story about the training facility that Red Bull New York needs. ASN talked to Eric Stover, of course, Mr. Baker. Talked to Mr. Stover about having that training facility. Now, originally, it was supposed to be in Hanover, New Jersey, which is more northwest of Red Bull Arena. Everything was going fine through the discussions at the township. Then all of a sudden, there was a halt. I believe it was more financial than it was protesting. And Red Bull does have the land, and they can build on it. But the problem right now is it's just nothing is being done. Because at the moment, Hans Bacca is not impressed with Montclair State. He feels that if you're going to bring in new players, and if you want the club to feel that you're very important player for Red Bull New York, you need your own training facility. Well, apparently, the mayor of Harrison, Raymond McDonough, has stepped it up again. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Raymond McDonough wants to build the training facility in Harrison, New Jersey. Not close to the stadium, but in an area somewhere in Harrison. Now, the team originally announced their plans to build a six-field facility in Hanover back in August of 2007, and they hoped that the completion date would be in December of 2008. Now, as we said before, there has been no construction, nothing has happened, and you know, Red Bull is a little frustrated. At the time, which we all agreed, the stadium was the most important thing built, and it is already sparkling. One thing is for sure, folks, once this training facility does get built for Red Bull, this will be another win-win situation, not just for the club, and not just for the players who will be on the club or the coaching staff or the front office. It will be another win for the supporters of this club. Yes, it was Metro, and now it's Red Bull New York. You can definitely see that this ownership, this company, Dieter Mateschitz, wants to, of course, expand his brand. But you know what? He truly cares about the game in this country, and he wants to make this club into a special club. Many people I've spoken to behind the scenes have said the Red Bulls are doing everything the right way. They want to make this club succeed. And this is why we all hope Thierry Henry does after the World Cup to play for the club. I am excited already. I can't wait. This is going to be fabulous. As I've said before, the next match will be this coming Saturday, April 3rd, 10:30 at night, Red Bull New York on the road at the Seattle Sounders in Quest Field. Obviously, they're probably going to be looking for a little revenge after their terrible performance to start last year's first match. And I've already mentioned it on MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, so that's my review. Please go ahead and read it over at Major League Soccer Talk. And right now, we're going to get to the audio. Hans Bacca. He will we'll have his audio on right now. Coming up, he talks about a lot of things about the match. He still feels that there's certain players he needs to fill a certain position. Obviously, we all know that Dave Vandenberg has been released by FC Dallas, and he would love to come back to Red Bull Arena. He was at the match for the opener to release a flag, a banner, the official fan balloting of the starting 11. And unfortunately, you know, the biggest uproar, in my opinion, is not seeing Giovanni Sevre say on that starting 11. You know, I understand that, you know, Jozy Altidore did some nice things while he was on the club for, to be honest with you, it's two seasons. He had a full year in 2007, and he had half a year in 2006, and then another half in 2008 before he transferred over to Villarreal in La Liga for $10 million. Giovanni Severese was the first true striker to come to this club. Half his goals weren't pretty. Yes, they were rebound goals, garbage goals, but you know what? Does it really matter? All that matters is the entire ball crossed the line, and it was number 17, Giovanni Severese, that also deserves to be honored for the club, either as Metro or Red Bull New York. And, of course, in Todd Ramos, actually, there's... Number 10 is being worn by Makumba Kanji, but his banner is raised in the rafters on the supporters' side of Red Bull Arena. So Todd Ramos, the first Metro player to be inducted into the Soccer Hall of Fame, has his banner raised at the top of the roof inside Red Bull Arena. And now, ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the head coach of Red Bull Arena, I should say Red Bull New York, my apologies, Hans Bacca.
First, if you can please turn off your cell phones or put them to silent. Thank you. Coach, if you can give an opening statement on tonight's match.
Yeah, I would say it took us 20 minutes in the first half before we find our shape when we talk about the defending game. It didn't look that good. We were all over the place the first 20 minutes. I think we were a little bit too hectic to start our pressing game almost up to the 18-yard line for Chicago's 18-yard line. So we were spread all over the place. And they were definitely the best team we've been playing so far, including the preseason. After 20 minutes, it looked more solid, more compact. We're winning more second balls in our central midfield, took some advantage for the breaks. An even game. Second half looked better from our side. Chicago perhaps a little bit more possession, but I don't think they hurted us that much. They went up to our 18-yard line, but I think we closed them down rather well. But it was a very, very even game. And would have been a draw. We forced it a little bit too much in our attacking game. It was too many unforced errors. We need players who can get hold of the ball. There was no really good rhythm in our passing game. We can just be better and better. Perhaps it was because of the first game, and I don't know, players were a little bit nervous and maybe some forced errors. But it's a great start for us after a rough last season. And going to two away games.
We'll take questions first. Bill?
Can you talk about Olivier, so opportunistic, it seems, in the attacking third, Santos getting his own rebound, and then here today, he'll be able to get the ball off the bench as well?
Yeah, he's the player today. You can see he's close to being number 10 because he can be the player from central midfield who go for the killer passes, final passes, but he will score goals for us too. And he's an absolute excellent hard worker. His work rate is phenomenal and kept going for 90 minutes.
Ives.
Can you talk about the back four? Obviously, last year was a big problem with defense, but...
Yeah, as you said, I would say more that our back four were excellent. Absolutely, all of them, including Bona, who made a couple of key saves. But Reem, Petke, Hall, Miller, the way they defended was definitely our key to win the game.
Fine.
How unusual is it for him to take a shot at that distance?
From the right foot is not usual, I can tell. I didn't thought he had a right foot, but but he showed it now today, and he's been outstanding the whole preseason for us. And I said before, I'm a little bit surprised that no other teams in Europe picked him up when he was out of contract.
Brian.
Just curious, we talked a little bit beforehand about how you didn't know, you went, you did well in the preseason, but you never knew how you responded to guys that got in the season. You weren't sure exactly where you'd be as a team. Talk about what you learned, I guess, about the MLS soccer.
I would say Chicago surprised me the way they started to play from behind, perhaps it's because of the Mexican coach. I don't know him that well, but we played El Salvador with Mexico, and they all the time tried from the goalie just to give short, come short to the back four, and they were technically good side. I was surprised, I must say, and the first half when we then started to press him too high, it was space all over the pitch for them to play. So I think what I've seen so far, as I said, this must be the best team I've seen in the MLS so far this season.
Jay, then Stefan.
It's just one game, but how critical is it for this team to get off to a good start?
I think it's, I can't say it's a must, but after the rough season, the last one, I think to start after being unbeaten in the preseason, even playing against some high-profile teams in the preseason, then winning the first game, it's very, very important for the confidence for the players and with a new stadium. And I think we just can be better and better. We, I'm not so happy with our attacking game today and the passing game because we couldn't really hurt Chicago's back four. We had two strikers coming short all the time. No one of the strikers took any spin runs in behind so they could close us down too easily, I would say.
Stefan.
What happened toward the end of the game there with the team? It seems like the possession you guys were having early on kind of disintegrated. Do you think that was just the team trying to hold on to the lead?
Yeah, I think so. Some at the same time, both center backs, Brown, Condi, started to go for more direct passes up to Collins, John, and even before McBride left. So that's typical when you one up, they had to do something. And they just get straight passes like this, and we just dropped more and more and couldn't pick up the rebounds. So we were under pressure.
Christian, then I was here.
So much of the attack came down the right side with Dean Richards. Was that by design against Chicago, or is that just the opportunities you had?
Yeah, that's Dean Richards' pace. So we have to play him in much, much more. We don't have that pace on the left-hand side. And Danley is probably Borman and more of a fullback. I think that it's not his position playing wide left, so I don't expect that much. I was thinking before the game perhaps to play Roy Miller on the left midfield and Danley Borman as a left back, but the back four has been so solid the whole preseason, so I wouldn't change anything there. So we've tried Candy wide left too, but we don't have the pace on the left hand side.
I just have one more question after that.
Last year was the opener, but it was more of an event with Santos here, a lot of fans here to see Santos. This is more of a true kind of New York Red Bull crowd. What did you think of them today and how they kind of supported you guys?
Yeah, I think it will be, as I said before, this stadium should sell itself in a way with the atmosphere, the noise, and if we are close to having sold out. It, you know, every time you have sold out, you have this kind of fans behind you, you will win 6-7 points a season just because of all the support you get.
Last question up front.
Can you talk about Condo's performance tonight, Coach?
Yeah, still he was building on the Santos game too. He you know, he's the way he plays, he's a line keeper, but he played rather well when he went out for crosses today too. But he, of course, he made 2-3 key saves. He's so quick on right, left, and he recovered after they had one good chance. I think it was the free kick, and he recovered very, very quick after he saved the free kick, went up and took the second one too. So that clean sheet and absolutely perfect.
Thank you very much.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Hans Bacca from his post-match press conference against Chicago Fire. Let me tell you something. This man has already started to become a difference for this club. Him and Eric Soler, both of them are on the same page. Both of them know what they want out of this club. They know what the purpose and the goals are. Obviously, make the playoffs. hopefully, you know, if they make the playoffs, they could do some damage, but we'll see what happens. But right now, I think a fabulous start to the MLS season for Red Bull New York. Fabulous season for the players. We also found out that Mr. Richie Williams has signed a contract extension. So he'll remain one of the top assistants on the club. Congratulations, Richie. Congratulations to you. After, of course, before flying out to Seattle, Red Bulls took a trip to West Point to face Army's soccer team, men's soccer team. And it was a little hairy towards the second part of the first half. You know, John Aguadello got the first goal, but Army pulled one back. And then when the second half started, Red Bull's like, all right, we're not going to mess around here anymore. We're going to take them out, and took them out they did. 3-1 the final, John Aguadello, 2 goals. The bright, shining star of the Red Bull New York Academy, of course, Giorgio Chagadze, was the first signing out of the academy. They still have some more players that are playing in college right now, like Matt Castle. There's also Johnny Exantis, but we'll find out about them maybe somewhere in the future. Right now, Matt Castle is playing for the University of Maryland. Happens if Red to sign him up and bring him over. Red Bull New York right now, 1 win, 1 goal, 3 points to the good. And coming up soon, I'll share some audio with you from some of the players that were able to speak. Of course, like I said before, Joel Linpear, we got his audio, Mike Petke, Jeremy Hall, and Dane Richards. You know what? Let's go right now to the goal scorer, Joel Linpear.
And I know he dropped a few balls in the beginning, so you know, were you looking to test him at all, write something on net?
Oh, of course, we knew this, and especially we said that we should try him to shoot, but I think in my shot there was nothing to do, probably. So I hit very good the ball, and I'm going to see the replay of it later on. Yes, I think so. I think so. Because this what we have now, it's a really, really nice stadium. It gives a lot. Like I told, this atmosphere here, it means for every player, I think for every fan, and every club worker, and everybody who is with the club, so it gives a lot.
What did the stadium feel like? What stadium in Europe did the stadium feel like to you?
No, it's I've been outside of Bayern Munich stadium, white and shiny. It's a little bit same class.
2 goals in 2 games here. You look kind of like it. You gonna move in here? You gonna see if you can live here?
No, I'm trying to settle down. So just to see, take step by step and moving forward. Now not from today on. You know, like today also points counts, and I try to play for the team. So I don't actually care too much if I score this goal. Of course, it makes me happy if I score winning goal or nice goal, but at the end of the year, everybody counts the points, so that's the important thing.
Hans said he didn't know you had a right foot till today.
No, I don't have. It's for the walking. But sometimes.
Right.
Weather a little bit more like Tromsø today than last Saturday?
Yeah, it was my weather, so I hope it stays like this. No, I'm just kidding, because it's, I think we had some nice, we had some nice weather here, and of course it's springtime, the weather can change everywhere in the world. Too much happening with weather anyway. Too much happening in the world anyway, and nowadays. So many going to be a catastrophe in scoring, so I hope we don't get this here.
Tom said he was surprised that more European clubs didn't go after you and you were available. Did anyone pursue you from European
clubs? Yeah, I was looking to find me a good club, and I didn't actually, I don't know what happened, because I had like, after the season we had like, my last game was like in the start of November, and then it was like peak break, and then in Christmas time and everything was coming down, and the New Year's, everybody was calm, and maybe I was a little bit unlucky, but I took a chance, and now I'm happy that I'm here, and you never know what happens one day again, but until now I'm very happy here. I have a good team, so me and our team try to make Red Bulls proud.
Yo, Spanish television.
And that was Mr. Jolyn Pear. You know what? Europe's loss is Red Bull New York's gain. What a player. Back and forth. Box to box. He brings the ball. He attacks. He scores. He crosses. And then he gets right back on the defense when the offensive chance is not there. Fabulous player. Fabulous pickup by Eric Soler. And, you know, I never knew he had a right foot either. Who knew? Who knew? Who knew? I didn't know he had a right foot. I had no idea at all. Fabulous player. Joel. And now we're going to go to Mr. Mike Petke and his thoughts about the match and the atmosphere and everything.
No, I mean, it's an unbelievable environment to play in. You know, I hate cliches and stuff, the whole 12th man type thing, but it really is. I mean, I thought Seattle last year was unbelievable. Toronto's always unbelievable. This brings it to a new level with the noise that's generated underneath the roof and echoing. It's unbelievable.
What does this do to you personally? How does this affect you?
I mean, it definitely gives me percentage rate raise. Absolutely, when I'm out there looking around, it's a full crowd, you know, and they're supporters of ours, and they're pushing us on, and especially to hear the noise after we got the win when that playing 1-0, having us go salute the crowd and having them stick around for it. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's the way that a sporting event should be, and I'm hoping that we keep winning and it continues like this.
You guys last year obviously a lot of goals. Let in collectively, let the back four and obviously two were real short.
Well, yeah, I think it was a block of eight for sure. The midfield is to throw in there as well. It's just a different mentality this year. It's coming from the top and trickling down, which, you know, possibly, you know, really didn't happen last year. You know, we know what's expected of us. It's not always going to be pretty. It's our job to keep the ball to the net and limit the shots on Buna, you know, but we know that when we do let shots go through, Buna's going to be there to save us. I think, especially in the midfield, they did a great job tonight helping us out.
How meaningful, I mean, after the way some of those games went last year, how meaningful is it that maybe you didn't always hold possession, there's nothing spectacular, but you just ground out victory,
yeah.
Professional, and you ground out?
It just feels different. It feels great. It feels that our hard work since January 10th, now obviously it's only the first game, but up to this point, our hard work that we put in is paying off, and it's showing, you know, and we put ourselves in bad situations tonight, you know, and I never thought that we were going to lose that game, but there was many times I didn't think we had control of it, but if that shows, those are the games at home when you don't have control of it, when things aren't going right, that you have to find a way to win, get 3 points at home, and I think we did that tonight. It's going to hopefully set the tone for the weeks and the months to come.
It's been a while since you got some ugly results.
Yeah.
That making any sweeter?
No, it makes it sweet to get the 3 points, you know, and to start the season off right and continue what we've been doing in preseason. Next week's going to be a very difficult challenge. You want to see Al, it's always tough there, but we have to work on some kinks this week and take the momentum we have tonight into next week.
A couple of games on the road, you have something else to prove after last week.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, like I said, we have some things to work out, but we're heading in the right direction, and everybody knows what difficult task the next 2 weeks are going to be, and it's our job to get at least a point, you know, somehow. Hopefully correct.
Thanks a lot.
Mike Petke, ladies and gentlemen, you know, he is right. they need to get some wins on the road, because for the last 2 years, their road record has been god-awful. Only one victory in 2 years, and that's during the Juan Carlos Osorio regime. So basically, out of 30 matches in those 2 years, it's been a win, 8 and 21 losses for a combined total of 11 points. Not going to go with the goals against differential, because you want to know why? It's just too painful to worry about it. It really is. So, Mike Petke for you, ladies and gentlemen. It was all very interesting, and it's all very true. They have to get off to a good start up in Seattle. To Mr. Jeremy Hall, who is currently our right back, but apparently there are news coming out that Chris Albright is getting better, getting fitter, and possibly moving Jeremy Hall into the midfield on the left side. Jeremy Hall, plenty of potential, but at the moment he is right back, and he is paired up with Roy Miller on the left side, and of course center backs Mike Petke, Tim Ream, and here's his description of the match and of his teammates on the back line.
He's a freaking pit bull out there. I mean, he works hard offensively, defensively. You know, when you play it into him, he doesn't lose the ball. He's very clear on the ball, and that helps out a lot. You know, he's a good passer. He links up very well, and, you know, we need that in there. You know, someone who's going to work hard defensively, also offensively, and then, you know, someone who, you know, rarely loses the ball in there.
Congratulations on winning.
Thanks,
man.
Thank you.
How's it going, man?
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
So, you know, you on the left side, and you're just, you know, playing hard out there. You're feeling the fans. Just talk about the atmosphere real quick. And
oh, it was awesome. Just like last week versus Santos, the crowd came out again, and it was awesome and very important for us to get 3 points, you know, going on the road these next 2 weeks versus, you know, Seattle and Chivas, which are going to be two tough games. So we wanted to get off on the right foot. You know, we did that. We got 3 points tonight, so we're all excited about that.
Obviously, the last two matches you played last year against Chicago, 1-0 defeats. You know, now you're on the other side of that this year. You're able to contain the forwards. You're able to contain the attack. You allowed them to come up and you know, just made a wall in front of the 18.
Yeah, I think just all preseason and these last two games have just been very good defensively. I think all preseason we gave up maybe 4 or 5 goals. We scored a bunch, and, you know, today we didn't give up any goals. So, I mean, it was huge for us. We know that defense, you know, wins games, you know, and today I thought we did a great job of that. You know, they had possession, you know, a little bit here and there, but as a whole, we shut them down. We contested everything. We made it hard for them. You know, they're good players, so I thought we did well defensively.
Your back line mates, talk about Tim Ream and of course Roy Miller, because you already know about Mike.
Mm-hmm. No, they're both good players, and, you know, Tim is not playing like a rookie. He's playing like he's played at this league for a while. I mean, very composed on the ball, links up out of the back, very confident on it, and you need that. He doesn't just get in clear downfield, and it makes it easy for everybody else. He's composed. If it's not on, he'll bring it back around, and same with Mike. You know, you having that veteran there next to him, he just has a lot of potential and can do really good things for himself. And, you know, Roy, he's also a veteran, playing, you know, international level, very good player defensively, and I think he is a good spot for him going forward. You know, he's also a threat going forward as well. So our back line is looking very nice right now.
You talked about the atmosphere before, but talk about the physical field. I know some of your older teammates have talked about how they dislike playing in turf and the impact that it had on their bodies. But now as you're playing all your home games on grass, how do you think it's going to impact this team?
I mean, last year we had a little bit of knocks and injuries at turf, you know, with Achilles, knees, backs. We train on turf at Montclair a couple of times, and, you know, just training on, you know, that turf at Montclair once or twice a week, you know, guys' backs are hurt and they're sore, you know. Guys are sitting out just because, you know, we don't want to, you know, get any injured people, you know, for today's game. But, you know, playing on grass, you know, home games is going to be huge for us. Save some injuries, and everybody loves to play on grass. That's how soccer should be played.
Jeremy Hall, ladies and gentlemen, and yes, that's how it should be played. No offense to Seattle. I know the turf feels like it plays like natural grass the way it grabs on and everything. No offense to Mr. David Falk at all. But positive things here, of course, Toronto FC, BMO Field will have a grass pitch. And, of course, moving out of the Meadowlands, we have a natural grass pitch. So players like Juan Pablo Angel, they're very happy. They don't have to worry so much about those little issues because of the field turf. Now, obviously, two road matches now at Seattle, which is tomorrow night. Later on in the season will be at New England, which at Gillette Field they do play on a field turf. And, of course, I'm not going to go back into that. Some of you already know how I feel about why they changed from grass to field turf. And, once again, this is not because it's soccer-related. It's really New England Patriots versus New York Jets related. But that's another time, and I'll get to maybe that type of discussion later on. But, once again, Jeremy Hall, he sees it. Tim Ream just does not play like a rookie. He actually plays with confidence. He's calm, and he goes out there, and he does the job. And you know what? It's a godsend for Red Bull New York, and I'm so happy for Red Bull New York that they found Mr. Ream. You know, they were waiting in the draft, trying to see if he was going to get picked, try to see maybe they can hold off before they pick him. But you know what? Sooner or later, once your number comes up, you know, you got to – attacking players that you got to find some dual defenders. And they got Tim Ream. Good for Red Bull. I'm very happy that he's here. Final audio from the players. Mr. Dane Richards, unfortunately, a quick two questionnaire. He was on the bike. He was drinking his Gatorade. I didn't want to bother him any longer, but obviously whatever was said by Mike Petke, Joe Linpear, and Jeremy Hall.
Daniel Foyce with Dane Richards, and finally, first official match at Red Bull Arena. Just talk about the crowd. Talk about how the atmosphere was out there.
Oh, man. From last week, the atmosphere is amazing. Hopefully, we keep getting 3 points, and more people will be coming. They can't hold it, so maybe they have to add somewhere on the stadium. But it's really nice out there. We're playing behind the crowd. The crowd, great enthusiasm. So just going to continue and try to make them proud.
You took advantage of Chicago. You were dangerous all match long. I mean, was that the plan? Was that the game plan that Baca gave to you?
Well, I'm playing a bunch of confidence right now. So once I'm in the middle of the field, I try to be safe with the ball, try to keep the ball. Once in the final third, I just do my thing. Try to provide a shot across and just be dangerous. So.
Very quick, very fast. Now, we're going to quickly preview again. They're going up to Seattle to face the Sounders. It'll be once again on Fox Soccer Channel for you guys. Obviously, there will be a watch party with the ESC over at Nevada Smith's on the Lower East Side. If you're in Hoboken, Mulligan's on 169 First Street. That's always a great place to be if you're going to be in Jersey. Have a local pub that shows Premier League matches. Head on over there, watch at home on the HD if you can. The HD situation will be solved, unlike what happened when they had the Santos match for everyone outside of the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, tri-state area. You know, once again, we got to try and see if the club can avoid another meltdown like they had when they last played Seattle at Quest Field last year. It started the 2009 season. They had the first 10 minutes, and then once Freddie complete hell. And hopefully, with Hans Bacca as the head coach, that the club will come out strong, they'll come out attacking, and maybe they'll quiet that large Sounder home field advantage. But you know what? We'll see what happens. I'm hoping for a draw. I think that would be a good start. You start off with a draw, and then we'll see what happens when they go on the road next week. You know, about Juan Carlos Osorio and Jeff Agus. This is what happens when you have two people clashing. Egos clashing and ruining something positive that happened in 2008. Everything that they earned went straight down the toilet, and it's a shame. When falling through the hole, and it goes for naught. But hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, the Hans Backe and Eric Soler regime is off to a good and strong start for the club. And we'll see what happens with about 29 matches remaining in the regular season. And we'll find out later on when their Open Cup qualifying match against Philadelphia Union will be played. Red Bull New York won the toss. They will host the first match. And their next opponent, if they win, will be the New England Revolution. And, of course, they won the toss if they wish to host the match or head over to Gillette Stadium and challenge the Revs up in New England. And now, finally, what can we say? Joel Lenpere, Estonian international midfielder. He has been a revelation for this club. He has done a fantastic job, not just in the preseason, but these last two matches. You never thought you'd see... When was the last time you actually saw a Metro attacker, either forward or midfielder, even a Red Bull player, to pounce on his own rebound or pounce on a rebound and just smack it in the back of the net? Obviously, Giovanni Severese, a long time ago, always followed the ball, and whenever there was a rebound, he just smacked it in. Like I've said, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a garbage goal. They all count. It doesn't have to be beautiful all the time. If it stinks, but it scores, that's great. Lenpere, I have to agree with Hans Backe. How he fell through the cracks in Europe and not a contract, he has looked absolutely fantastic. The Premier Soccer Shop in Hoboken, they already have his name and his number getting ready for printing on the white jerseys. They're all set. Fabulous, fabulous pickup. I mean, obviously we all know, and maybe this is a little bias in Europe, those smaller countries like Cyprus, like Estonia, you know, maybe they're not strong enough during European Cup qualifying and World Cup qualifying in Europe. You know, but you never know when you find a player with such quality, amazing quality. And he's very, too, amazing how humble he is. That's all he cares about. Yes, he scored, but now it's over. The match is over. We got to think about the next match. This man is humble. This man knows he's got a job. Tell he's very, very happy being here in New York. This is his first time playing. I believe this is his first time in the United States altogether. Poor guy, though. You know, he missed the small world after all. But of course, I'm talking about when Red Bull went down to Walt Disney World and they played in the Disney tournament against both Houston and TFC. Of course, winning the cup there, the preseason tournament. But you know what? Hopefully, when the season's over, and if it's a positive ending, maybe a little negative ending, or maybe it's a so-so ending, you never know. But hopefully, he can get his family, and they can go to Disney World, stay there for 2 weeks. And if he needs to stay in Disney World, I am his man. I am a Disney fan. I can't help it, but that's me. I'll give him a hand where to stay, where to eat, and whatever. But let me tell you something. This guy, Joel Lenpere, he's going to become a fan favorite for this club. Just like Angel is, he will be that too. Aguadelo, hopefully, will become something special if he gets his chances in regular matches. We'll see what happens. Kondul, so far, has done a very good job at the net. He's held basically two clean sheets. Even though he was subbed out in the 60th minute to bring in Greg Sutton, honestly, Kondul, clean sheets. That's my actually been on the ball all the time. diving all over the place. There was that one play actually by Kondul where he thought the ball was going to come. Unfortunately, it bounced to his left. Amazing cat-like reflexes, dove to his left, made the pouncing save, saved all 3 points for the club as they defeated the Chicago Fire 1-0. Once again, atmosphere was fantastic. Lynn Pierre, the players, a little hectic here and there on the field, obviously, but you know what? I think they'll be better once the season gets going, and hopefully we'll get a positive result up in Seattle over in Quest Field. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with a... I'm going to plug his site. I hope he's listening. And, Sean, you're going to get a plug here, and hopefully people will be looking it up. It's www.believeinussoccer.com. That's one whole word. Believeinussoccer.com. He came over as well for Red Bull Arena opener. He found me on Major League Soccer Talk, and he asked me for an interview for a book he is doing about U.S. soccer fans and our beliefs, opinions, and everything that's going on. And I said yes. I would love to be in this book. Hopefully he'll get it printed. And if it does get printed, I will get the information and I'll let you guys know when the book is coming out and where you can find it. So I'm very happy to be in this project involving Mr. Sher. And like I said again, if you wish to check out the site, it's www.believeinussoccer.com. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank my guests for being on the show today. Of course, Mr. Eddie Rock, soccer agent to the stars. David Falk of Goal Seattle. I also like to thank Mr. Paul Dalgleish, former player and current head coach of the FC Tampa Bay Rowdies. And once again, thank you, Red Bull New York, for allowing me to have access for the match to get these fabulous comments from Hans Bacca, from the players. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I will be back at my regular day, Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, April 6th. Hopefully you will we'll have some good people on for you. We're going to talk with the NASL to get us some more players, and we'll let you know when that happens. I can tell you right away, Mr. Ben Burton, Chicago Fire supporter, of course, a friend of mine of the original Around the League in 90 Minutes show. He'll be on at 2:15 this coming Tuesday. And we'll also get you some more Red Bull New York quotes and comments from their match against the Seattle Sounders on the road. So that's going to be exciting, very exciting indeed. And we'll give you some more information of who we're going to try and get on the show through MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com. I write on MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com. Once again, please don't forget the MLS Talk podcast, as well as the EPL Talk podcast, hosted by my good friend, Richard Farley. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the show. And just once again, the matches for Saturday, April 3rd, Colorado Rapids will be hosting Chicago Fire at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. That's the 4 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. Central, Telefutura, Spanish language, on the direct kick. But if you are in the New England area, Sportsnet New England, DC United will be hosting the New England Revolution at 7:30 p.m. I believe that match will also be seen on Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic. There could be a plus channel. Find out in the local District of Columbia Maryland and Virginia area. And of course, once again, Fox Soccer Channel at 10:30 at night. The Seattle Sounders will be hosting the New York Red Bulls, Red Bull New York, RBNY. It's all the same club. And hopefully Red Bull will get a positive result out of that one. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. I thank you very much for listening to me and to this show. I hope you found it entertaining and at the same time educational. And now we know what the situation is on how a player gets signed in Major League Soccer. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Please read my writings on Major League Soccer Talk. A member of the EPL Talk family of sites. Have a good day, everyone, and enjoy your football. Thank you.